versus, like, I mean, would you say that 9/11 was a media singularity then? Or?
Yes.
Yes?
I would say 9/11 was a media singularity in that it consisted of a single event that lasted 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And with no way to frame that narrative and no way to frame the space in which the narrative is going to be received. It happened live.
But isn't that because we were part of the spectators that saw it on TV and weren't actually there?
Absolutely. But that was the singular nature of it, is that all of us watched this thing happen as it happened.
That's not singular for the ones who experienced it, though, is it?
Okay, so if you want to... Now, Scoville was talking about a media singularity.
Okay.
So I'm using it in that sense. The idea of the people who experience it through electronic means versus the people who actually, you know, were in the building or lost loved ones or, you know, were escaping the debris or whatnot. You know, I don't think you can ever reduce their experience to some, you know, academic discussion of a critical nature. That said, to put on the pragmatic hat, we're talking a very tiny fraction of the people who actually were part of a very singular event, which is the mediatized version of that event, you know, what Virilio would call an information bomb, which it very literally was. It was an explosion of media with a very precise detonator in New York City that, like a nuclear bomb has a conventional explosive in the middle, like TNT, and it explodes, which then, after the explosion, sets off nuclear material to a critical yield, which becomes a nuclear explosion.
Right.
But it's a two-step process.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 was like that nuclear bomb. There was a plane hitting a building, which is sort of your traditional sort of stick of TNT, and then the TV camera turned it into a nuclear blast, which, you know, exploded across the world all at once. You can't say Beijing is like that. It's, first of all, the event is too long. I mean, we're talking, you could talk about a 7-year gestation period from when they first got awarded the games. You can talk about all the politicking that took place up to the lighting of the original torch in ancient Greece. You can talk about this torch relay as a neo-colonial project that went around the world. The fights with Taiwan, the fights with Tibet over whether that torch would or would not go through those properties, territories. You could talk about it beginning with the opening ceremonies. You could talk about it beginning with each sporting event. I mean, where do you... To set a temporality for the Olympics is very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, it would be far more of a slow-burning weapon than the nuclear blast of 9/11. And so I don't see them being comparable at all. And so I very much question this idea of it being a singularity.
Mm-hmm.
In a technical, material sense.
Mm-hmm.
Much less the actual cultural experience sense of how everybody is receiving what is a very, very framed message in every particular spot. You know, so while people are watching 9/11 as it happens on TVs all around the world in relatively unframed, unvarnished format, with the opening ceremonies, you've got every host national broadcaster with their own commentators framing it in a particular way. You know, as well as then the spaces in which it's received, whether that happens to be somebody's home, or whether it happens to be a bar where people are gathering, or whether it happens to be an officially sanctioned Beijing 2008 public space, or whether it happens to be the Hutong. These all add extra layers of framing to the event that escapes singular perspective.
And this use of the word weapon, would you find that there is some sort of in that ambiguity of time scales that's evident with the Olympics and its relationship to Beijing versus and the rest of the world. Is the critical analysis of that some sort of weapon that can be used against something, or how are you meaning this idea of a weapon?
Well,
or in the sense that the reverberations of what's happening this year in China, especially in the context of Olympics, earthquake, and the protests about Tibet, do we mean weapon in terms of repercussions, or?
Well, I think weapon, in the case of 9/11, I'm using in a very particular way, because it was a very deliberate act that intended to leverage the infrastructure of the enemy. So they used the perpetrators, I won't use the word terrorists, the perpetrators used the enemy's buildings.
Mm-hmm.
and the semiotics that they carry. They used their planes, and they used their media networks. All that they had to chip in were the perpetrators themselves. They had to chip in a few people who were willing to sacrifice themselves for a cause. The rest of it was all appropriated from the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very deliberate act. And certainly, when I say information bomb here, I'm saying it in the sense of a conventional weapon, but it's a semiotic weapon. When we talk about Beijing Olympics as an event, I don't see that as a weapon. I don't see that as a bomb, at least,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of somebody perpetrating an attack on someone else. Now, could you frame it, however, as sort of relatively low-level, small arms fire by China signaling to the rest of the world, you know, hey, this is who we are right now? And certainly you could parse the text of the Olympic opening ceremonies in such a way. I mean, there were little snippets of the military here and there, you know, very blatantly spliced into the opening ceremonies, and that was, you know, of course, no coincidence. So yes, semiotic weapon in that sense, in terms of the content. In with 9/11, semiotic weapon in terms of the structural form,
mm-hmm.
and two different animals altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a critical practice. To answer your second question, I think, first of all, we need to map these weapons, you know, or we need to map a semiotic warfare, or the tools of a semiotic warfare, and not that this isn't being done already, it's certainly being done in certain ways. But, you know, I think a semiotic warfare demands a certain understanding of the tools and weapons and the logic or logics by which they're used. And then for a critical intervention, I think that opens up opportunities then for those who wish to challenge certain power structures in appropriate ways, whether it means subverting those weapons or by creating new weapons.